welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gather to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week on Addressing Alaskans, we're at the Matsu Salmon Science and Conservation Symposium, where artist Ray Troll gave the keynote address. Recorded on November 16th in Wasilla, listen to Ray Troll's talk entitled Salmon Are Cool, next on KSKA's Addressing Alaskans after the news. This is KSKA Anchorage, and you're listening to Addressing Alaskans. This hour, we'll hear from artist Ray Troll, who gave the keynote address at this year's Matsu Salmon Science and Conservation Symposium in Wasilla on November 16th. Ray Troll was introduced by his big brother, Tim Troll, of the Nature Conservancy.
It doesn't take long up here before we find our lives revolving around salmon. Eating them frequently, catching them by net or rod and reel, drawing them, or like many of you in this room, ultimately trying to understand them and protect them. But unless you're born into one of our native cultures that thrived upon salmon, you may not fully appreciate how much their presence, how much the very idea of them is part of the fabric of life up here. And appreciation is important to those of us in the game of protecting their habitat. But that appreciation has to be more than aesthetic. It actually has to be reverential. And it must be visceral to the point where we could not imagine life in Alaska without them. Enter Brother Ray. Reverential salmon, the fish that dies for love. Wild king, you make my heart sing. Visceral, humpies from hell. Spawn till you die. Ain't no nookie like Chinookie. If you must smoke, smoke salmon. Don't worry, be humpy. Ray has helped elevate the wild salmon in the conscience of all Alaskans. His t-shirts and salmon slogans have become our in-state inside joke. Something we share together, our culture. Try to explain any one of those shirts to someone from Nebraska or Kansas. You're Alaskan once you get salmon. And if you get salmon, you'll understand a Ray Troll shirt. So the bottom line, did you do a bottom line shirt?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Our job in this room is actually to make sure the Alaskans always understand a Ray Troll shirt. If they do, then they'll be wild salmon. And that job is a lot easier in a culture where salmon are iconic, or for lack of a better word, cool. And there's been, and that's really been my brother's job, and one that after growing up with him and doubting that he'd ever amount to very much, I must admit, he's done quite well. Brother Ray.
Wow. Well, thanks. That is the first time that's ever happened where my big brother is actually, you stole my thunder, Tim. You gave all my best punchlines, Spondy and I, Die and all that. But no, it's the first time we've ever actually, this is really rare. It's very special. So thanks. And Tim was the first of the Alaskan trolls, the trolls that make it up here to Alaska. And but anyways, thanks so much. I know this is kind of a completely different thing at a science symposium to have a goofy fish artist kind of guy, but I've done a few of these kind of things before, so thanks for having me up here. It's just really cool to be here in Wasilla, the thriller in Wasilla, and you know, it's my first firehouse appearance ever, you know, so... So yeah, usually it's I'm gonna do another talk tonight, and there will be beverages of the alcoholic sort too. At that, there's usually better with alcohol involved, but you know, coffee, All right. So anyways, let's just jump right into it. So here's those here are those troll kids. And this is sitting on the front steps of our parents, our grandparents' house in Painted Post, New York. And Tim is in the upper left there. And I'm the punk there in the Cub Scout shirt, you know. And so actually the top four are the ones that ended up in Alaska. My sister Mary there, and then Kate, and then Susie, and she's still in New York State, and then sister Terry is down in Texas. And let's fast forward a little bit. I'm going to fast forward many years there. I came up to Alaska in the summer of 1983, and that's Tim had already been living here for a while, but it was my big sister Kate who lived in Ketchikan, and she invited me up to run a seafood store. And I had a Master of Fine Arts degree. I'd just gotten out of Washington State University. And this is the summer of 83. There I am, a younger fellow. I have hair on top of my head and no gray in the beard there. But I got my MFA, and I'm a fishmonger with my MFA. So this was an ill-fated retail venture for my sister because, well, she'd hired her kid brother to run the business. I don't know about that. But also, you know, I really started looking more at the salmon and wasn't really into the business of selling them so much. So that's what happens when you hire an artist. And that's my very first piece of Alaskan fish art right there, that smoked salmon sign. So, yeah, I came up to be a fishmonger. And Ketchikan is my home, and I have been there ever since. And so that summer has turned into a very long adventure. And actually, it is the banana belt of Alaska, after all. Man, it's cold up here. What, 20? I'm going back down where it's warm. So, yeah, we're kind of Alaskan posers. It's sort of, you know, we don't get the snow. We don't get the cold, but, man, we do get the rain. We get the rain. And, you know, we get 156 inches of rain on the average, in the average year. And by comparison, Seattle gets 35 inches of rain. It's like, ha ha, you know, we're very proud of our rain. We're very tough. And so actually, I think last year, 200 inches of rain for us. So, you know, in the wintertime, it's a very different place, Alaska, right? You know, it's now the visitors have all gone away, and it's just us Alaskans left here to our own devices. And, you know, there are those vices that you can turn to in the wintertime. And, you know, it's the downfall of many Alaskans. But, you know, there's also the creativity that I really encourage people to turn to. And I've found Alaska to just be a great place to be a creative person. And you realize, too, that this great creativity goes back not only just a few hundred years since the Europeans have been here, but, you know, thousands of years. All this really inspiring art coming from this great state of Alaska. But let's talk about that fish culture that the previous speakers have been talking about. And, you know, there I was, the artist who had just landed smack dab in the middle of this culture, and I really wasn't all that aware of it. Like I said, Tim pointed out that we'd never eat, I don't think we ever did eat salmon in our lifetime, you know, back in New York and as Air Force brats moving around from place to place. But I moved to Seattle in 77 after getting out of college, and then I drifted on up north in 83. And it was being around the fishing boats. And the Saners, in particular, too, would tie up right down. I lived actually right in the waterfront. The Saners would all come to town. And the town, you know, the size of the Alaskan villages and cities, just, you know, it just swells in the summertime with all these visitors coming up. But a whole big portion of that visitor, people that are coming up here all about the fish. And I was the artist in the middle of this thing. And I started producing this art that was inspired by that. But also, you know, my first... after I had successfully driven my sister's retail business into the ground, I took my winter job that first fall being here in Alaska. I started working in the slime line, so with the fall runs. So I was down in the slime line in Ketchikan, and I was able to get a studio right upstairs. And this is Silver Lining Seafoods. So I had a free space upstairs, and I'd run downstairs and I'd check out the fish. And I started drawing the fish, so something fishy started going on. And this is early on. This is 84, and you can see the fish are kind of, I haven't been looking all that closely at them. It's just really more the idea of fish and, you know, pen and ink stuff here. And here I am, something fishy. But there I am, drawing the fish up in my studio. And like I said, I got my little textbooks, but I was also able to run downstairs and start looking at them. So color pencil on paper there, but I slowly was becoming a fish head. The fish were now kind of speaking to me. And I seem to be a conduit for something, but there I am. This is the view down from the fishmongering window there at Hallelujah Halibut is what we called it, which was not really the best name. They thought we were Christian fundamentalists or something, but I wasn't. But not that there's anything wrong with that, but we weren't about that. So selling the fish. Like I said, I really come at this whole thing as an artist. My art background is, really my primary thing is what I like to do is just create art that's evocative and mysterious. And sometimes, I don't even really know what's going on in these things. I just start creating these scenes. So this is a scene that's called Rain on the Parade. It's a big charcoal drawing. But I started doing these kinds of images. Sometimes late at night, the spirits of all the fish I've ever caught come back to haunt me. And, you know, when you've had that experience of killing a fish, you know, we love fish, but wait a minute, we kill them, you know, and we like to kill them, and we're very proud of killing them. But then, you know, if you're a sensitive artist guy, you're tortured by killing them. And then you become a fly fisherman, and you release them, and there's all these great dilemmas here, you know, that's just a lot of, things to ponder when you catch a fish. But I started doing T-shirt kind of stuff like that, but, images that were ending up on shirts, and there's a mural that I was working on for Silver Lining Seafoods back there, but this is in the summer of 84 when I, kind of inadvertently stumbled onto what was going to become my career. I printed up these goofy T-shirts that were called it says Let's Spawn on them, and I was printing one fish at a time. I'd air dry the fish, the fish, the image of the fish, print one, turn the shirt, let it air dry, print another, hugely labor intensive thing, but we printed up like 300 of these, a friend of mine and I. We did it for a short-lived seafood festival, and somehow in that weekend, it was only a 3-day long festival, I sold nearly all 300 shirts. And as a young kind of starving artist guy, I'd never seen so much money in my life. I had $1,500 in my hands, and I was, whoa, this is cool. So I started, I'd kind of stumbled into this audience that seemed to be hungry for somebody to do something a little irreverent or have fun with this thing. So fish just began to kind of inform my artwork, and I began to catch fish. And I began to fall in love with fish, yes, perhaps a little bit too much, but that began to, spawn these kind of images. There I am. You can see that came directly from that experience. This is the very first king salmon that I caught. It was 41 pounds. Just changed my life. And I had to do a drawing all about how cool that was. He held on for dear life because he knew in his heart that this fish was his. You know, you've had those big fish on, you're just not going to let them go. But this also spawned this image here. Ain't no nookie like Chinookie. That's when you love fish perhaps way too much, when you start confusing the two. As we started doing these things, the other critical thing that I learned on that fateful weekend in 84 was, I had sold all these shirts at retail, but I took the leftover shirts and I took them to the local store. And I never learned this stuff in art school. I learned wholesale. You can actually take them to the store and make a little bit less money, and they'll take them and they'll sell them. And that's, okay. So Michelle and I went from town to town in Alaska. We got on the ferry and drove around and went from town to town. They came up north too, and just got outlets for the shirts. And had my friends pose like supermodels. And soon we were creating these fishy T-shirts that were starting to go out there everywhere. And there's Bob Waldrop and Terry Gardner from Silver Lining Seafoods. They were kind of mentors to me, and they were down there for the fashion shoot. Some of you guys may know Terry and Bob. But I also began to paint, you know, rather than just the goofy t-shirts, I started painting these things and kind of simultaneously just juggling all these different things and my interest in, you know, doing humorous things, but also just wanted to get more, just the art of it. And I did these large paintings. And this is in an elementary school down in Ketchikan. And it's called Midnight Run, and it's the salmon going through that incredible transformation. You know, they go from these silvery, beautiful animals to these dark, gnarly beasts. There I am, painting that. No beard, no belly, no glasses, young. So anyways, this is the first time I've kind of given this version of this talk, so I assembled a bunch of my salmon-inspired images. So dog day afternoon. So there's dogs of every sort, but dog salmon and dog fish. And I think I do have an actual dog, at least in the border, running around in there. And so here's dogs and chums. So every possible, you know, bad pun that can be exploited from salmon, I've been there. If you have any, you know, the well is kind of running dry, folks. 30 years of this, I've, you know, give me more. And sometimes, you know, like I said, people will approach me and they'll have some great ones. So here's, it's a dog-eat-dog world. So there's dog salmon and dog fish and dogs, you know, going to the dogs, running with the dogs. How about this? A wine label, Cosmic Coho Salmonberry Wine, a fine table wine with just a hint of slime. Wild King, you make my heart sing. Ko-ho-ho, so, and Humpy Holidays. Yeah, this is a Christmas card that's been out there for a while. Humpy Birthday. I like the birthday cake there with the humpy in it and the candles. But, you know, it really is this, like I said, the transformation that salmon go through in their life cycle, that as an artist I found really inspiring. You know, these wonderful silvery beasts, and then they turn into these gnarly, just monstrous looking beings. They get in the fresh water, and as they stay there, you know, their flesh begins to drop off. They're sort of like zombie fish in a way. They're on a one-track mission. All they can think about is sex and love and death, and they get these big teeth. And as an artist, I find this rather inspiring. So it started spawning these kinds of images, humpies from hell, the sort of mutants. And if any of you have ever worked in a slime line with humpies just endlessly coming, and they're in every ditch in Southeast Alaska and all over Alaska, and entire neighborhoods reek, you know, they do seem to sometimes be sort of a plague upon the land. Forgive me for saying that, but there seem to be sometimes an embarrassment of riches. But it was this image that I did in 1987 that kind of really kicked things into high gear. Spawn till you die. And if there's the one image I'm going to be remembered for, it's probably that one right there. They'll put that on my tombstone. He was the spawn till you die guy, you know. And frequently, you know, I can overhear people sometimes saying, you know, Ray Troll's going to be here tonight. And yeah, who's that? He's the spawn to die guy. Oh, yeah, okay, that guy. So it's really fun to kind of see where it shows up in different things. And here's I keep track of these things. That's Steve Zahn on the left, and that's Isaac Hayes on the right there. And this is in a movie that's called Chelsea Walls. And Uma Thurman's in this movie, but never, to my great dismay, is she ever on screen at the same time as the spawn to die is. But the crazy guy, there in the center, we know he's crazy because he's wearing Spawn Do You Die. It's like Central Casting got the note one day, you need a crazy, dangerous guy, Spawn Do You Die. So here we'll see it in different movies. Here's a movie that's called Cosmic Ray. Clearly the very disturbed guy, Spawn Do You Die. And check this out, Motley Crue. I knew I'd finally made it, you know. That's Mick Mars there, wearing Spawn Do You Die. And here's my friend, he's a Tlingit carver from Sitka, and he was invited to the Bush White House, Christmas tree lighting. Laura Bush is on the other side of the tree right there. And I'm very glad that Tommy Joseph is representing there. So I thought that was very cool. And I know that I am not only bad, but I am super bad in the movie Super Bad. If you freeze frame it, there in the bad guy's room on the wall in the back, spawn, do you die? Very proud of that. Mad cow, happy salmon. Don't wear this in Kansas. Don't. They won't get it, first off. And then when they finally do get it, they'll be pissed off. The Da Vinci cod. Mona was a cannery girl. She's got her Helly Hansen's on there. Oops, this is not a salmon. That's why I colored it pink, so you'll get it. Kawasaki. Like I said, I'm at the bottom of the barrel now, you know, just scraping around. There was a chef that gave me this one. Hey, Ray, Kawasaki, get it? Ah, I like that. Yeah, okay. It's the udders down there, right there on the, on the pipe there. That's jamming salmon. So salmon be jamming. They're downward facing dog. Admittedly, a very narrow niche. You got to know your yoga poses and you got to know your salmon species. Rock and row. For our cannery, for our hatchery friends. And here's that don't worry, be humpy. Bobby McFerrin, don't worry, be happy. So I did this Alaskan version. Don't worry, be humpy. And if you must smoke, please smoke salmon. That's my public service announcement out there. This one also, I'd like to thank as a public service announcement for Alaskan fisheries and salmon in particular, and the great job that I think we do in sustainable fisheries. Fish are not for farming, eat wild salmon. And it's fun because this really does engage people. They want to know more about this, and you know, you get to explain to them why it's makes sense to eat wild salmon. But here's a dumb one, queer eye for the sockeye. It's got a little recipe down there, red salmon flambé, yes, sockeye-delic. But yet, at this point, you can see the fish are pretty accurately drawn, and I have the whole life cycle of the fish in there. And speaking of the life cycle of the fish, I was really honored, you know, I do all this goofy stuff, and then I'll kind of snap back into reality and get back to work. But I was really honored to be approached by the Smithsonian to do the illustration for the case that's in the Ocean Hall. This is on permanent display in the back of the Ocean Hall. So if there's salmon display, this is in there. So I co-own the copyright with them on this, so I don't ever really get to freely use this one without their permission. But so I worked with them to kind of develop this image, but they wanted to, they essentially just let me go, and I drew this out. They wanted to show all the, not only the life story of the salmon, but all the animals that, you know, depend on salmon at different points in their life. So it was kind of a challenge to figure that out, you know, sort of to draw this image and this big circular image. But actually, you know, they do let me use this image from time to time for good purposes, so they'll let me output it. So if some of you maybe want to use this image somehow, just talk to me and we can maybe make that happen. So for educational purposes, so if you want to do a big output of it somewhere, I'm sure they would be okay with that. But I had a great deal of fun doing it, and so we got commercial fishermen in there, we got sports fishermen in there, we got indigenous fishing in there, yes, also represented in there, and different predators all along the way. And there is no free lunch. This is something you do learn as you get out there in the real world. Here's another image I worked on for almost a year doing this painting. It's a real large painting, 10 by 14 feet. And the high school mascot down in Ketchikan, the Kings. So everything in this painting is a king. So it was fun to just do all these king things. And so you can test yourself. Anybody know the king in the upper right-hand corner? King Crimson. I knew somebody would know that one. So yeah, if the 60s were good to you, you know what King Crimson is. We've got Elvis in there. We've got Burger King in there. You know, every kind of king, but it's the mighty king salmon. But, you know, like I said, it's just really cool the number of creative people that live in Ketchikan and all these different Alaskan communities. But in Ketchikan in particular, I've been able to hang out with artists like Israel Shotridge here. He's kind of squinting at the camera there. And this is the very first major commission of his life. And so I've been like a lifelong buddy now of Israel as his art career started. So he's coming at it, obviously, from a real deep tradition. And his first totem pole tells the story of the creation of salmon, as told by not only just the Tlingit people, but actually his family within the Tongass tribe, this clan within the Tongass, within the Tlingit nation. It's the Tongass tribe. You begin to realize all these different, it's really nuanced. But this is a story about that his family had been telling, and so it's kind of their family story within the Tongass tribe about how salmon came into the world, and via Fog Woman is the story that they tell. And this is kind of set in Annan Creek, just north of Ketchikan. So all the characters that are on the totem pole are done in this drawing here. So I was asked by his family to do this at the potlatch for this. So at the potlatch, as the pole was raised, this poster was given out. So it was really cool to be able to be part of that and kind of understand the whole, deep roots of the culture. I mean, talk about really connecting to the animals. It really is, this is their family story is kind of here on this pole and how they're involved in salmon. And salmon, Fog Woman married Raven, and I don't want to garble the story too much because I invariably will, but basically Fog Woman, before Raven met Fog Woman, all he could catch were sculpin. Not to belittle the sculpin, but there's not so much meat on the sculpin. So when he met Fog Woman, she began to give him salmon, and she would pull them out of her hat. Literally pulled them out of her hat, this mist-covered hat, and she would give him the salmon. And Raven thought this was really cool. And after a while, as Raven usually does, he started taking credit for this. Hey, check out my salmon here. These are my salmon, And he began to be very proud about the salmon and feasting on them and having big parties with the salmon and feeding all his friends. And after a while, Fog Woman grew a little tired of his boasting, and they had some kind of fight, and actually he hit her, and so she left him. She said, enough of that. So this is kind of cool because it's really about, women's rights in a way, because she said, well, enough of you, and she left him. And some versions of the story go that, well, as she left, she decided to have pity on him and let the salmon come back once a year, But if you want to know more about that story, it's the Tongass tribe, the Tlingit Nation, that tell that story about the Fog Woman. So these are some. This is a drawing from one of my notebooks too. I haven't really. This first time I've ever shown this one, but it comes from hanging out with scientists like yourself. And I think it's really cool the isotopes that have been isolated. So now we can actually see the nitrogen that the nutrients that the salmon bring in from the ocean into the forest, and there really is this whole symbiotic thing. And literally the salmon, as an artist, I can draw them in the trees, but they're in the trees in Southeast Alaska, all up and down the Northwest. So here's another image showing basically the salmon like merging with the forest. They co-evolved. Salmon co-evolved in this landscape here with the forest and the landscape. They really are, it's a whole, that's the wonders of evolution. It was all these ecosystems evolving along with the animals. And so here is, this is at the University of Alaska Southeast in Juneau, and this is a canvas I did there. And then all around the lobby there, we painted fish going up. And this is on the UAS Juneau campus. But also in hanging out with scientists, so this says trout waiting for dinosaurs to go away. And I take my inspiration wherever I may stumble across it. So let me tell you about how this came about, trout waiting for dinosaurs to go away. Like I said, I stumble upon the inspiration wherever I get it and crank out the images also. But this is, there's a line in a Richard Brautigan poem, the great hippie poet from the California days, but Richard Brautigan wrote Trout Fishing in America, and he's a surrealist, goofy poet guy, and I just love his stuff, and just short little goofy poems. And he wrote this one short poem about, called The Fish Music, and the last line of the poem is, the trout waited patiently for the dinosaurs to go away. And I went, oh, that's really cool. I like that idea. And so, but it piqued my interest. I wanted to know, well, how far back in time do trout really go? So I really set about on this mission to find out how far back in time do trout go? I mean, when do they really show up in this? When do they evolve? When do they appear in the ecosystems? And I wanted to know if trout actually did live in the Cretaceous with the dinosaurs. So I started digging around in my scientific literature on Oncorhynchus and really figuring out what the family tree is of salmon. And actually, this is in David Montgomery's book. David asked me to do this illustration for his book. I also worked with a number of taxonomists to figure this out here. This is in David's book, The King of Fish. And this shows the relationship of all the salmon and the sister species of various salmon. And you know, when they rejiggered the Oncorhynchus family and actually figured out, you know, it's actually a little bit more complicated now, folks, you know, because your trout, your Western trout are all salmon too, you know, because they are in the genus Oncorhynchus. So technically they're salmon as well. So your steelhead are salmon, your Western trout, they're salmon. Your cutthroats are actually salmon because they're Oncorhynchus. But, you know, the English language and the scientific language don't always always coincide. But the most intriguing thing, as I wanted to find out how far back in time that the salmon go, I came across the sister species of the sockeye. You see the broken branch over there? And it's this beast. It's the saber-toothed salmon. It's like, and people still think I'm making this thing up. And I'm not making it up. This is a really cool beast. And now, actually, David and I have pitched the idea of doing a story, a whole book on the saber-toothed salmon. But what's interesting about these guys actually went extinct before the ice, before the Pleistocene ice sheets. They were in the Pliocene. They went extinct, Miocene, Pliocene. But this is a really big salmon. And it's a sister species of the sockeye salmon. So imagine the fillets on this. And actually, you know, I mean, there's probably some DNA in the bones there, you know, so maybe somebody could, you know, bring these back. But this is the type specimen. They were dug up for the first time and identified as salmon. They originally were called Smilodon ichthys rastrosus, but then now that they've figured out there actually are an Oncorhynchus. So they're actually a big filter feeder. And this is the one at the University of Oregon. It's never been on display. It's in the back room, so they let me take it out front, and I sketched it out. But that has some pretty big vertebrae on it. But check out, and there's the fang of one saber-toothed salmon. And I've been talking to Jerry Smith, who's out at University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, and trying to get him to do a paper on the actual size of these animals, because there's the vertebrae. These are the ones in L.A. and L.A. County and also down in San Diego. That's the vertebrae. This might be a 15-foot salmon, you know, with big fangs. The reason that, you know, this is cool, and you get kids' attention with this kind of stuff. You get the public's attention with this. So actually, Jerry is interested in doing a paper and actually extrapolating, because you get these really, really large vertebrae like that. You can do the math, and you can start figuring out how big this beast is. So I convinced the Denver Museum to actually have a life-size sculpture of one wrestling. You know, you had this clash here, the giant saber-tooth. So, you know, you got saber-tooth salmon. It's got to be fighting with the saber-toothed tiger there. So they actually indulged me in this, so, and did that. But also, just to kind of wrap it up here, here's a few things that I've done recently. And 2 years ago, painted this bus that we have in Ketchikan. And they wanted to have this bus system called the Salmon Run, and they asked me to do this. And so I got my friend Memo Haragi to come up, and Memo is from San Diego. Check out the flaming halibut on the top there. So they actually wanted to just do a digital output on the bus. I said, you know, for the same price, basically, why don't, you know, why a digital output? Why don't you let me loose and we'll get Memo to come up and we'll just paint directly on that with the heavy duty enamel paints. One of my favorite bits is when you hit the brakes in the back, the halibut eyes will light up. But talk about getting your salmon consciousness out there literally on the streets. You know, people go, whoa, what was that? So there's the secret halibut on the top. Also like to do, I do believe that everybody should be in a band. I just love being in bands, and I'm always in a band. Have been ever since I've been in junior high school, and it's just one of the greatest things. I'm in the Ratfish Wranglers now. Where the Fins Meet the Frets is one of our first CDs here. But also like to say that we have songs about salmon and stuff, and one of my favorite ones is Cannery Girl. And I also like to point out that Marilyn Monroe's first movie feature, she was a cannery girl. Did you know that? See, the film is called Clash by Night. She's packing sardines, though, actually, down in Monterey. But I sing this song with my band about cannery girls. And so we did this YouTube video. So check it out. It's up on YouTube. And we had choreographed cannery girls and everything. It was great. Sort of Busby Berkeley style. And it's a very catchy song. And actually, rather than have an old man like myself prancing around with my guitar, I convinced my son Patrick to play guitar in it. And so check that out at your convenience today sometime. I guess we're up over 10,000 views now. We're very excited about that. But we shot it down at the Silver Lining Seafoods. And then it's kind of circling around a more serious thing, salmon. They're really magical animals in so many ways, and really, and a little shameless plug here for a product that I helped out with. Talk about the incredible things not only that salmon do and inspire, but they're so good for you in so many ways. And, you know, and all the research on omega-3s. So speaking of the band, this is a song I wrote, and it's called, I won't sing it to you. It's too early in the morning. Super Sockeye Wonder Pills, a cure for damn near all your ills. They're made from salmon running wild and free. From underneath the midnight sun, they're caught by Alaskan fishermen. Omega-3s, they are so good for you and me. It'll pick you up if you're feeling down and help you shed those extra pounds and even help cure your menstrual pain. So, my friends, it's no joke. It's the antidote for strokes. You've nothing to lose and all to gain. So I actually recorded this with the Ketchikan High School Choir. So we did this whole omega-3s and then the omega-3s. So it's this whole great thing. But actually, all these things that I'm saying up there, I can back it up with scientific papers showing you actually even the bit about the menstrual pain, even the stuff about depression, losing weight. All of these things are actual benefits of omega-3s. And eating salmon, it is so good for you. All the research, and here it goes on. Fish oil will protect your mind, helps with protecting your mind, and help prevent you going blind. It's good for your eyes. It is the very best thing for your heart. You know, omega-3s. It's amazing what it can do for your heart. And so but that's not my only point. It will lubricate your joints. This is true, and will help you make a brand new start. So with that, here's our gallery down on Creek Street in Ketchikan, where we get four of the five salmon species swimming up the creek right there. It's also really inspiring that our retail store is actually located in an old house of ill repute. So the standard joke is that this is where both men and salmon headed upstream to spawn. Perfect place for me to have a gallery, and that is the gallery there, the Soho Coho. And with that, I've rambled on quite a bit, but I really am honored to be here this morning in Wasilla, and I hope that you can see it's a blend of sheer silliness, but also with heavy doses of science thrown in. So, thanks.
You've been listening to artist Ray Troll on KSKA's Addressing Alaskans. Ray's talk entitled Salmon Are Cool was recorded at the Mat-Su Salmon Science and Conservation Symposium in Wasilla on November 16th. You can find links to his artwork and music videos on KSKA.org. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at KSKA.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to KSKA.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.